I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for listening. What's the latest with the NHL? I'd like to know. We've been pointing out how maybe sort of surprising, partly because of the fact that it's been so warm here for most of November. Like, we would be 20-plus games into the Sabre season now in a, quote, normal year. And, you know, obviously they haven't started, and we don't even know when they might. So let's find out. Greg Wyshynski with us on the Western Hotline from ESPN. Greg, how are you?
I'm good. It's tough because, like, the first 20 games of the Sabre season is usually the best part of the
season. Yes, by a lot.
You guys are really getting robbed.
10-game winning streaks by Thanksgiving. Last year, I think they might have been 9-2 or something last year.
Yeah. So, and now you got Taylor Hall, so, like, you know, he'd probably go undefeated for the first 20 games
but,
of the season.
But
that's all right. That'll come. I mean, eventually a first 20 games will come, right?
And it'll be 2/3 of the year. So it'll be worth more.
Harder to screw it up.
Right.
Right. The quicker the climb and the shorter the fall. I mean, it's a pretty perfect season for the Sabres.
What is the likely number of games as you see it?
All right, so we've done a lot of calling around this week as there's been more discussion with the NHL and the NHLPA, and specifically the NHLPA with themselves. The number you keep hearing is 60. That is much dependent on whether we get this season going around January 1st, which is the date that Gary Bettman has been hung up on for a really long time, and the date that both sides are working with right now. The teams will tell you privately that they believe it could be middle of January, just because of how much work has to be done, how much the teams have to do to get their operations back up and going. Players coming in from all around the world, training camp, the whole thing. They think, you know, the teams think it could be a little bit later, but I've also heard from a lot of teams that say, you know, if Gary Bettman wants the season to start on January 1st, it probably is going to start on January 1st. I mean, that guy does not put out too much out there that doesn't come to fruition if he's got the owners by his side.
So what's the biggest part of this now? I'm gonna guess. I'll answer first. Money. I mean, we've got a pandemic. Like, there's logistics for sure, but it seems like the biggest hang-up this week, early this week, has been like a new ask by the league for more money back, or really the players to take less money.
Right. Okay. So there's two big issues that are at play here. One is sort of functional, and one, like you said, is a negotiation. The functional one is the Canadian border. The Canadian border is by far the biggest issue the National Hockey League faces in all of this. There's going to be an all-Canadian division based on the fact that those teams can't really travel over the border, and the same goes for the U.S. teams to Canada. It sounds like a four-division format. I put together something in my column today on ESPN.com that deals with what the divisions could look like. Sabres being in one with the Bruins and then a bunch of teams from the Metro seems like it's going to be the most likely scenario.
Mm-hmm.
That's one part. That's one thing of moving pieces, and that's the part that they're still working on behind the scenes and finessing. And I, as far as I know, I talked to a player earlier. They don't even know what the playoff format's going to be yet for the season. Because keep this in mind, you can't really go Eastern Conference, Western Conference if you have a Canadian division that stretches all across Canada, right? So, like, it's kind of hard to figure that out. So they're going to have to maybe play around with the playoff format a little bit. The money part, like you said, is a real important thing. So the NHL and the NHLPA, as you know, negotiated a new collective bargaining agreement during the summer, during the pandemic, okay? And so they figured out a path forward under the economic problems that the pandemic is causing. And the players are deferring some of their salary this year. They've got a 20% cap on escrow. There's a lot of stuff that they did during the summer to address the economic hardship that's going to befall the owners this season. Well, the owners have come back to Gary Bettman and said, well, we kind of want more liquidity this year. We want to get a little bit more money to work with this year. And so the league has given, they're not proposals, they're just kind of like frameworks, what we're thinking kind of things, giving these things to the players saying, how about you give up a little bit more money up front and then get it back later on? Or how about later on you increase the escrow payments to the owners so they get their money back quicker? Because remember, it's a 50-50 split in revenue between the players and owners. No matter how out of whack that is this year, the owners will eventually get their money, you know, in the course of the CBA. So basically the owners are like, we want more money now than later. And the players are kind of like, we already did this. Like, we came to this agreement together during the summer, during the pandemic, and there's no reason to revisit it now. But the owners are certainly making the ask at this point, and it could really gum up the works.
It was, I would say, stunning to me that they agreed on that CBA. We would have talked to you, I'm sure, before that got done, and I was not optimistic. I mean, you've watched entire seasons go up in flames over, you know, them not being able to agree on how to cut the pie up. And I thought it was to their credit that everyone sort of saw the situation for what it was and recognized maybe how bad baseball looked in bitching and moaning about nickels and dimes, relatively speaking, okay, easy for me to say, when, you know, the world was shut down and, you know, people were losing their livelihoods. I'm a little worried that hockey is treading into that area now with this getting out, Greg. Do you see it that way?
I do, but I don't. I mean, I think people have come to realize that, and it might just be that we're, you know, baseball kind of blazed this trail, that these negotiations are going to happen, that you know, we're all struggling and people are losing their jobs and, you know, businesses are going under, but the millionaires are arguing about their millions. Like, we kind of understand that that's part of the gig. And I don't think it's going to be any more of a demonization of the owners and the players than there would be normally. But I think what's different about this versus the summer, and this has been, you know, told me by a couple of people at the NHL, is that it was a much different negotiation in the summer because they all had one goal in mind, which was get back on the ice, finish the season, hand out the Stanley Cup. And to get there, they had to finish the CBA. They had to do the 2014 postseason, the two bubbles, the whole thing. Everybody was willing to sacrifice in the summer, knowing that they had to get what they wanted, which is to get back on the ice and finish the season. Now, you know, you've got owners that don't even want a season. You got owners that are like, you know, if I don't open up my arena for anything, I might end up making more, you know, sorry, let me rephrase that.
Losing
I might
less.
End up losing less money yeah, right. than I would if I open up my arena. There's 2,000 fans there, and we're playing 60 games. So it's a completely different conversation based on the external forces that, you know, led to these two sides coming together and really working together in a way that we've never seen before, at least in my lifetime, versus what we're seeing now, which is a lot less urgency and let's not sugarcoat it. The owners asking for something above and beyond what they already agreed to have with the players. Like, it's a cash grab, and it's something that's happening outside of the agreed upon collective bargaining agreement that they had forged during this pandemic. And then 4 months later, they're asking for something different.
So I think I hear it in your explanation. Not that right or wrong necessarily matters in these things. Isn't it, in your opinion, wrong for the owners to do that?
It's not wrong to ask. I mean, if we're being honest, like, worst case scenario in June, or whenever they were presented with worst-case scenarios, might look a hell of a lot different than worst-case scenario in November. I mean, I think we all know that. I mean, you know, the predictions of what this pandemic would look like 2 months ago versus where we are now, again, is different. And so you can't kill them for asking, right? But that doesn't mean that they get what they want, because they already made an agreement
right.
with an idea that things could be worse. Now, I've heard this could go two different ways. Like, there's going to be some hardliners, especially amongst the agents, that are going to say this is a settled matter. You know, don't even you know, pay any mind to it. You know, what they're asking for is not anything that they will or could get. Because keep in mind, you can't lock out the players if you have a CBA, right? That's off the table.
Mm-hmm.
But I've talked to a couple players that have kind of said, look, we knew they were going to come back and ask for something, right? It's always going to be something. We're a little bit worried about giving them anything because that means they could ask again. But I think that there might be on the player's side a little bit of wiggle room in the sense of like, all right, if they really want something now, what are you going to give us for the trouble? And as far as I've been told, because there's only been like one real big exploratory call with the NHLPA this week, they don't have a sense of what that might be. Like the NHL hasn't come back and said, if you defer your salary this year, you get XYZ for doing that. Because the NHL stance on it right now is, oh, what you get is the chance to play, which again is already guaranteed under the CBA negotiation they had last summer. So I ain't going to fly.
Yeah.
Greg, you mentioned in the course of a response a moment or two ago that there would be owners, teams that might prefer not to play. Do you have a sense for what kind of number there is there? Like, I mean, I could guess at some teams that might feel like it would be better, but I'm just curious, better to not play and lose less money that way. Do you have an idea of like how many teams might be feeling that way?
I don't want to say which ones they are because I got it kind of secondhand, and I don't feel comfortable sort of like putting it on the record. But, you know, I think your mind immediately leaps to teams that we know aren't the most financially solid, but you'd be surprised. Some pretty successful franchises have made noise behind the scenes about, you know, not wanting to come back and play unless there's fans in the building because just of how much, you know, money they're gonna lose. So is it the majority? No. Is it a few teams that might have some sway behind the scenes? Yeah. And I think the big takeaway, though, is this. Like, we've seen teams in other levels of professional hockey in the U.S., the Southern Professional Hockey League, the ECHL this week announced an entire division of teams as opting out of the season. And there was some thought at one point of, all right, what if an NHL team decides they don't want to play? Well, we asked Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner, that for a story recently on ESPN, and he said it's an all-or-nothing scenario. Like, either we don't play and try to evoke some force majeure clause in player contracts where, you know, it's disaster and we can't play, which, of course, would lead to a number of lawsuits, or we're all in. And I think that at the end of the day, I'm not too concerned about some of these squeaky wheels getting their way. I think everybody's going to be on the same page, and I'd be shocked if they weren't, because if there's one thing, you know, Gary Bettman has been very effective in doing in his three decades with the league, it's corralling these owners and kind of bending them to the whim of the commissioner.
I wonder how they would be able to reconcile that if some sort of practical judgment were needed, you know, other than just like, hey, come on, let's do it, and then they all say, okay, let's do it. Like, what would need? Would there be a revenue sharing thing? Would there be some sort of, you know, would have to be a deal made? And I mean, I think the point about teams not wanting to play is kind of like, yeah, of course. I mean,
right
here we've had a football season play out, and New York hasn't let fans go into an open air stadium, you know, 5,000 people in a 70,000 seat facility. So
yeah.
I don't expect anything anytime soon for the Sabres. Plus, with the border closed, they have a particular fan problem there. You know, it's not just the players here. So
for sure. And so I think part of the selling point is this: like they're entering a very important time as a league, which is that they're negotiating their next US TV rights deal with NBC. I mean, I work for ESPN. I am not privy to any conversations, but, you know, it's been reported that, you know, we might be in the mix for it. I mean, other networks as well. So, you know, live sports rights are still a very valuable a commodity, perhaps the most valuable commodity as far as, like, when the rights come up. And so I think the NHL knows that it's important to play and keep the product in front of people's faces and be able to show where the league is and where the game is in 2020 and 21. And put their stake down and attract interest for a new TV deal. And so I think there are reasons why you can sell owners on playing. But I think the ultimate one, the biggest one, is that how the season starts, which is probably in everybody's home arenas but with no fans there, is not how the season will probably end, which is with a 16-team playoff with fans in the building. I mean, the distance between right now in November and, say, May in, like, COVID terms is incomprehensible how much things hopefully could improve with the rollout of vaccines, with maybe, you know, the pandemic getting more under control than it is right now. Like there's a lot that's going to maybe move in a positive direction by the time we get around to the playoffs. So the notion is, even if you can't have fans now and even if you can't really make the money you want to make now, like, just give us until April or whenever, and then maybe we can start getting fans back in these buildings.
Boy, if the league is thinking and hoping, and they should be, that could happen, wouldn't the teams that don't qualify for the playoffs be bitching already now about missing out on that potential revenue?
Yeah, I mean, to your point about revenue sharing, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how that would all shake out. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be part of that. But again, it's sort of the unpredictability of the whole thing is that we don't know. I mean, for right now, I mean, as bad as things have gotten from a lockdown perspective in some states, there's still ones that you could probably put fans in a building right now. Won't be a lot of them, but you could probably do it in like Texas and Florida and places like that. So it's going to be different strokes for different folks, which is, I think, one of the reasons why the NHL couldn't do the hub idea again necessarily. And again, everything's on the table still. Nothing's been settled, but the sense I get is that they're not going to do it. Is because you have a team like Dallas where they didn't make a dollar in ticket revenue despite making the Stanley Cup final. Their owner is in the hospitality industry. He's getting clobbered. And they're like, why should we go play in a hub when we can open up on our own building and have fans there like the Cowboys are? You know, so like it's everybody's in a different boat for the most part. And it's been really, I think, hard for the NHL to kind of like create a one size fits all plan that's going to compensate for that aspect of it, at least.
To the Dallas owners' viewpoint, I'm sure they could find people who would go. I mean, I'm sure you could find fans who would go. I've been to Sabres games with only a few thousand people there. 2003, what? Maybe 2004. Wasn't that much fun.
But it's there, and they're buying stuff. And again, like there are some places that don't want to do that because they think they'll lose even more money if they have to open up for only a select number of fans. But there are some that are just like any revenue is good revenue. And I mean, shoot, you look like a team like the Lightning who play in Florida. Like, they had a bunch of people drinking out of the cup together at the parade. You know, if you're willing to put your mouth around the Stanley Cup after 50 other people with COVID did, you're probably okay going to the arena.
I was never comfortable with that idea, ever. I never wanted to touch that thing. And, you know, I didn't have anything to worry about, but it always seems pretty gross. Well, so, I mean, we are still not to the point where, I would say this about myself at least, where we can really talk about, like, all right, give me the lines. Who's on the top line here? What do we got? The Sabres have made, they deserve us to talk about this for at least one question's worth of time.
Sure.
They've made some really cool moves here to this team. I don't know if you think they've done enough to, like, become what? I mean, they're interesting at least.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, I think worth the price of admission, if there is admission at some point, to see what Taylor Hall can do with Jack Eichel. I mean, the best center Taylor Hall's ever played with and the best winger that Jack Eichel's ever had. I mean, that's going to be a marvel to watch. If in fact, they play together. I was talking to somebody the other day. We were reminiscing about when the Penguins traded for Phil Kessel, and everybody immediately went to, oh, my God, Phil Kessel, Sidney Crosby, it's going to be awesome. And they played together, and they had no chemistry. So you hope that Eichel and Hall has chemistry, but you can't guarantee these things. Look, I was skeptical when Kevin Adams got the job, as I think a lot of people were, just because of, you know, coming from the part of the organization that he did, questions about his qualifications, questions about, you know, what his function was going to be vis-a-vis the ownership. And I got to say that he's had a real strong offseason, like an impressive offseason. I mean, you know, granted, the Taylor Hall bit is as much of the, you know, the money available than anything else, but the Eric Staal trade was really shrewd. I think he's made some good little moves here and there throughout the lineup and maybe not bringing people back and in some cases bringing people in. I would have liked to have seen an upgrade in goal just because the goalie market was so robust, but that didn't happen. you know, they could easily be a bubble team, if depending on what the playoff format ends up being. But a lot of that is contingent on how dominant that top line could be, and a lot of it is contingent on how much Eric Staal could really help establish a second line behind Eichels, because I think that's a real key and could be a real coup in having him there in that position.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a sinkhole for ever since Ryan O'Reilly left, really, that spot. Careful when you refer to teams as bubble teams in these times, Greg. And, like, all this is about, like, really, when we start talking about the Sabres, like, could they be a team that challenges for the playoffs or makes the playoffs? How likely do you think it is, you mentioned 16 teams, that they end up going with 24 again this year because of a shortened season? Like, who wants that more? I read something today from Elliot Friedman that alluded to the players maybe finding that appealing. I'm wondering if you have a thought on that.
Yeah, there's zero chance of it happening unless they have to stop the season again. Like, the only reason why the NHL allowed that to happen is because the season was prematurely stopped. They had to appease the teams that were right on the bubble. There was no way to really judiciously separate playoff teams from non-playoff teams, given how tight everything was and given that there was a dozen games left in both team seasons. So Gary Bettman and I disagree about a number of things. But the one thing that we definitely disagree on is playoff expansion. I think as you watch the NBA create a play-in round, baseball, football, like all these organizations have expanded their playoffs, knowing that there's an appetite for it, knowing that there's revenue to support it. The NHL is steadfast in sticking with 16 teams because that's what Gary Bettman prefers. I think it's absurd if you, start next season, and by that I mean 21-22, bringing in the Seattle team, getting to 32 teams, and only half your league makes the playoffs. It's stupid. It's nuts. Like, who cares? But I think that the point is that it's going to stay at 16 as long as Gary wants it at 16, and every indication that we've gotten is that it'll be 16, unless there's a reason to go to 24 or something like that.
Greg, really interesting and enjoyable as always. Any questions for us? All set?
How's the weather? Pretty good?
Really nice. 61 at the moment. 61 at the moment.
That is fantastic. It's good to hear. I'd ask you a football question, but I'm a Jets fan, so I don't really have anything to say these days.
They looked not terrible in their last game. It has not snowed yet. I mean, specks. And there's been frost a couple of times.
But I had some snow on my truck yesterday morning, actually, but it's warmed up since.
It has really just not snowed yet, and it doesn't seem imminent either. Like, it's kind of weird, but it's one reason why I prefaced our conversation with this. Like, I'm not missing the Sabres, partly because of the weather, I think. And, you know, work-wise, Bulldog and I will go down there for home games, and that has not happened, obviously. So it's just kind of been strange for so many reasons. All right.
It very much is. And like, you know, here I'm in the Bay Area, and there's like a chill in the air and stuff. And it's usually that time when you expect to be heading to the rink, but it's not yet. But, I think the season's going to happen. I think what we're dealing with right now is the bumps of the usual player owner negotiation. But I would be absolutely stunned if they don't start the season. I mean, who the hell knows what will happen after that? But I'd be really stunned if they don't start the season.
Greg, thanks again.
Anytime.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, for your reactions, 803-0550. A lot of interesting information there and insight from Greg. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. John Clayton still to come today. This is WGR.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot?
Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
State of things right now, running back in that division. Damian Harris has looked pretty good, but Rex Burkhead's mixed in. You know, James White, occasionally Sony Michel could be back. You're right, if it's a two-man attack in Buffalo, of course, it's been very frustrating. What's annoying is I think both are pretty good players. I was a huge Zach Moss fan in the pre-draft process. I like Devin Singletary coming in as well, so I like it for the team, for the Bills. It's a great situation for fantasy. It hasn't really worked out too well. Miami, you know, maybe they might have Savon Ahmed. He looked pretty good last week. Matt Breida's coming back, so you don't feel great about those guys right now. And maybe if you have an open bench spot, LaMichael Perine for the Jets is worth a spot. I mean, you don't feel great about the Adam Gase offense, but they say he's going to be the main guy now out of the bye. So if that's a 15-plus touch sort of player, he could have some fantasy value.
Recognize the two voices you heard in that clip. The one doing most of the talking, Mike Clay of ESPN. The other, Sneaky Joe. Joe and his brother Louie are in for One Bills Live tomorrow as they were today, noon to 3. I heard Joe, that little mm-hmm in there. Usually that means...
I think that was me.
I'm ready to talk now. Right?
Is that what that is? I'm not sure I did it on purpose, but...
I'm ready for you to wrap it up. Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, let's go. Let's go, buddy.
You said enough here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bulldog and I are doing it when we want to make sure the other of us knows we're ready with the next question. So, like, when you say, in the middle of Greg Wyshynski, I know, like, you're ready. I don't have to ask the next question. You are ready with the next question.
Right.
There, inside baseball.
Yeah. That was a lot of information.
Yes, it was really good.
I'm going to go back
and listen back to it so that the next time we want to talk about it, I have everything lined up well, at least according to Greg Wyshynski.
Oh, I thought you might have meant Mike Clay, but yes, also Greg Wyshynski, yes. Both offered a lot of information. Yeah, Greg's like the best, isn't he? I mean,
yeah,
very good. All those articles he's writing are all insider. You have to pay for them.
Yeah, notice that.
Including his jersey rankings, which I was trying to access today, and I only saw just the St. Louis Blues
just
one.
That he did not like the Blues one. That's
hated
right.
Hated it.
We should have asked that question. Didn't get to it.
I love them. I don't know.
He did say the one thing about, hey guys, look, by April and May things could be pretty good. And I haven't been thinking about that as often as maybe I should be. I just feel like this whole thing, in so many ways or so many different points, was largely preventable. And it's just really depressing and upsetting. And now we're in this new bad phase where we're closing again. And I don't know. It just like does not even really make sense. Some of the terms don't make sense. And just the overall frustration without there having been a clear and concise strategy that we all could have just dealt with. In fact, it was from looking at Greg's Twitter. I should follow him. He's really good to us, too. That I saw an article from Time Magazine about, here's how you stop, or at least dramatically slow down the effects of this pandemic by Christmas. Here's how you do it. And it isn't shutdowns, and it isn't, you know, a vaccine needed like today. It's through tests that would cost a fraction of what we're losing with everybody closing. Like, it would be in the country's best interest, it would seem, to have, you know, this testing be available, rapid tests in your own home that you self-administer, that not everybody would have to do. If you know some people who were just like against it or don't trust it or whatever they would be. You don't need them. Like, you don't need them. People would be testing themselves in their own homes, and from there you could, you know, find out if people are positive and they stay home and others don't. Like, it's just, it seems like it's pretty simple. I mean, I'm maybe saying a lot by saying simple. It's just like, yeah, it seems smart, and it would require a
cohesiveness.
It would require just like, plan, you know, even if it's a directive, it would just require sort of the people's interests in mind. And this is just so screwed up. Like, now, I mean, schools where data says this is not spreading or closing again, which just messes with everybody. I don't know. I mean, I liked in these fleeting moments where people, you know, if it happens, people, you know, are listening to, like Greg Wyshynski just on with us, says, you know, just an offhanded little thing about, look, maybe by the spring, not even maybe, by the spring, it should be different. It should be better. We could have, we can envision fans at hockey games and playoff games this year. You know, it feels good to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that, you know, I hope that's the direction that we're heading, and I hope that we get there. I mean, what does it even say? You hope we get there sooner rather than later. Yeah, I mean, there's a an extreme amount of frustration, everywhere, I'm sure. And, you know, I've got mine, and it's, you know, everybody else has got theirs, and, you know, I don't want to argue about whether yours is misdirected and mine is earnest. There's just an unprecedented level of frustration, I'm sure, just across the board, across society, everywhere, that we're back here again. And, you know, trying to figure out what should have been done, you know, was a thing to do, you know, last January, probably. And none of it was done in any cohesive manner. And, you know, so here we sit.
It still shouldn't be too late. I mean, you could, at any day between January and now, it would be right to get to this point. I mean, it's still better to do it than to just say you can never do it because you didn't think of it first. Yeah. It's just like, now we're arguing about who's in power and just like, I mean, what are we doing? We're here in Erie County, worst in New York State. The governor is just like making the cheesecake crack and like, you know, we're supposed to, I could get a little carried away, and I know I shouldn't. It was nice to hear that from Greg. He's always great to talk to and a lot of good information. And I'm sorry we didn't ask him about the Blues uniform, because that would have been funny. I didn't hate the Blues uniform either. I don't hate it. I don't hate many of them. I mean, they're all kind of the worst ones are the ones that look so much like the regular ones. Like, that's
right. Like, the Islanders look like they didn't even try at all. You know, I don't really like the Dallas design, but, you know, that's a matter of taste. You know, they it's different. They did something, you know. You know, Anaheim went kind of wild, and that's interesting. I don't know that I like it, but I'm not mad about it.
That's
know?
Right. That's a lot of things, actually, in life, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know that I like it. I just know I'm not mad about it.
Right. I mean, I never – the Blues sort of throwing it back to that – they had that design, and there was some red in it in the horn and all that. I never really liked that design when they first came out with it, whatever year that was. I forget what year they're commemorating with this design.
The Blues?
But, yeah.
Gretzky wore it, right?
Right, I think. So it's in that time frame there, like late 90s. You know, I don't really care for it. Like, I would never buy it, but, you know, fine. Knock yourself out.
What's the point of being mad at it? What's the benefit?
Yeah, I don't know.
It would only be to sort of, you know, to entertain. Contrived anger.
The weirdest thing I've seen in all of it was something that it kind of escaped my attention until a few days after all of them had been released, and that's the lettering on the Toronto logo. where you've got capital small letters and then a tiny, a little N, and I don't, I'm not really sure what is going on there.
No, I don't approve of that. That is how little kids write.
The M in Maple Leafs is too. Like, there's right. two letters that are lowercase, the rest are uppercase.
Disapprove.
Why?
Disapprove.
Yeah, that, I don't know, I mean, I recognize that jersey style with the white on the arms from, you know, Daryl Sittler, you know, that era. So I mean, I like it. It hits a good, you know, a good button for me, and I didn't notice those letters until someone pointed them out to me. Maybe it was even you, Joe. I don't know. Maybe you retweeted someone who was commenting on it, and once I saw it, I was like, "You've just destroyed this! I can't. What are you doing? Why did you do that?"
They've already got a spelling error on there. They might as well have a grammar issue.
You might as well make the S backwards. It's like little kids writing. Little kids make the S. They write their S's backwards.
Yes.
That's what the Leafs should have done on the front of their jersey. It's time now for Rachel's Throwback Trivia. Throwback Thursday Trivia. 644-9878. First person with the correct answer to the upcoming question wins a $50 gift card from the fabulous Rachel's Mediterranean Grill. 14 years ago today, the Bills won a game in which a player caught two touchdown passes in one quarter, the length of the number on his jersey. 14 years ago today, the Bills won a game in which a player on the team caught two touchdown passes in one quarter, the length of the number on his jersey. That many yards. That's enough, isn't it? I've given you enough here. 644-9878. Name that player. The answer next here on WGR.
Here's the snap. Drops the throw. Five-step drop. Slips. Throws deep. Looking deep downfield for Lee Evans. He has separation. He's got it. Evans at the 30. He's headed to the end zone. At the 20, the 10, 5. Touchdown, Lee Evans. Unbelievable. 83-yard touchdown pass. J.P. Lossman put it right on the money to Lee Evans.
That, of course, John Murphy, that would have happened, or that would happen twice in the same quarter. Lossman to Evans, 83 yards. Evans' jersey number. Lee Evans is the answer to our Rachel's Throwback Thursday trivia question. Congrats to our winner. Maybe the game is better remembered for the ending. Peerless Price, a diving catch in the back of the end zone with 9 seconds to go, and the Bills won in Houston November 19th, 2006 to improve to 4-6. We were here.
Right.
We were here.
Yeah, yeah. We did postgame for that.
We would have. Yes.
Yeah.
Look at this. Look at this win.
I remember everything I said.
So do I, actually. Very good. The next week, they beat Jacksonville at home, and that's when I was sort of like, oh, what is the point? 5-6. Great. Perfect. This is how you want to have your, this is what you want. You want to be 5-6. Great.
Hey, in the hunt.
That game also, Eric Mold's only game against the Bills ever.
Which one? Houston?
Yes.
He played for Houston that day?
Yes. 5-65.
No, he was good. He was usually good. Molds. Yeah. What else is from that 2006 season here? The Bills beat Green Bay at home, 24-10.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe it.
Yeah.
This is Jerron's first year. We have 7-9 Bulldog. This is the Vince Young game. Remember the Vince Young game on Christmas Eve?
Yeah.
We were not going to these games yet.
No, we didn't have the games on our airwaves, so we worked home games from the studio as well.
Right. And as soon as we got into postgame, we went right to the phones.
Yep.
In those days, we went right because we could, right? We went right
and
to the phones.
And we as frequently is too strong. But it happened more than a couple times that we would start early.
Oh yeah,
and at one time I remember starting so early. I mean, you know, we didn't say anything on the air, but I could not believe how early we started. Like halfway through the fourth quarter, and our boss was like, "Get on the air!" I'm like, "Oh my god, it's like 3:15. What? Like what?
We're going until 7. It's a, right. I guess it's like a Monday.
Like, what in the world?
Yeah.
Okay. So we go on the air. Here we are. Yeah.
They lost a game in Chicago that year, 40-7. I bet we were on by 3:15. That Chicago game, 5 turnovers. And I know, my friend Chris, I know if you're listening right now, you were getting ready to text me that you were there. I know you were there. Our friend Chris, who was at all the worst Bills road games, yeah. I know the Chicago game is on his list. I just have to remember that. We talked about this game once before, and he called in. So that's Rachel's Throwback Thursday Trivia. Lee Evans and his back-to-back 83. It's funny that's exactly the number, 83-yard receptions for touchdowns in that game in Houston. John Clayton, when we come back, John is on the Seahawks-Cardinals broadcast tonight for the Seattle Network. We'll get his thoughts on this game tonight and the latest in the NFL after the update here on WGR.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.